The Caring for Kids Drive-A-Thon is on Saturday, May 4th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Bill Curry Ford. For every test drive in a new Ford on May 4th, Bill Curry Ford will make a donation to Shriners Hospitals for Children. It's that simple, a significant donation. There's no catch. Bill Curry Ford's commitment to the community continues. They're trying to get wheelchairs for kids and a whole lot more. This Saturday, May 4th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., no catch, no appointment needed, the Caring for Kids Drive-A-Thon at Bill Curry Ford. Start shopping now at BillCurryFord.com.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, post-draft edition of the show today. First show of the month of May edition, Derby Week edition. And you know I'm all fired up this week because this is one of my favorite weekends of the year. I love the Kentucky Derby. We got the Bucks full draft to work with now. We're going to get it all done on the show today. Here, okay, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, where right now they're proud to announce the nationwide lifetime warranty, new and pre-owned vehicles that includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, a 10-year roadside assistance, and 1-year complimentary service program. All of this you can see on the website. Go to BillCurryFord.com, that's C-U-R-R-I-E, and you can go there and check out all the inventory, pre-owned, brand new, everything you want to, before you make your trip down to the place itself, where it's been for over 50 years now, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, just north of Hillsboro on the east side of the road. Check them out. Start shopping today. Again, go to the website if you want to first, BillCurryFord.com. So here we are, and the full draft has been completed. Your Tampa Bay Buccaneers have selected 5 players on defense, a kicker, all right, and some other things, and we're going to get into all of it today. On last week's show, we were only talking about the acquisition of Devin White with the 5th overall pick, the linebacker out of LSU, who will wear number 41, by the way. So it looks like, you know, and he wore number 40 in college. Looks like he probably wanted to do that again. We got kind of an unofficial retirement with that uniform with Mike Allstott. And so it was said he's going to wear number 41, which is fine. 41's a distinct number. You don't really have a lot of associations with it probably for other people. I certainly don't. And when you look down the field and you notice 41, you're going to know who it is automatically. But that was just one guy. Now we got the rest of the draft after the weekend took place, and we'll be able to chew on that today here on the Free Stretch. So let's look back at how it all went down last week, because again, if you recall last week's show, we had picked Devin White, and we were talking, and I did the show on Friday last week like we're doing again this week, although it's Thursday night late. It's almost midnight. I'm recording on Thursday night. But we talked about how the way the first round unfolded, a lot of good players available in the second round. We thought we might be able to get, for example, someone like Greedy Williams with our second round pick, and then get two guys who people had been mocking to the Bucks in their first round pick, get them both without trading up or doing anything crazy like that. So as it turned out, that actually did happen. Greedy Williams was on the board. The Bucs did take a defensive back with the 7th pick in the second round, the 39th pick overall. It ended up being Sean Bunting at the time. He has since said his name is now Sean Murphy Bunting. He's going with the hyphenated thing, which drops him down a couple of notches in my book. Not to insult anybody, but a wise person once told me, never trust a man with a hyphenated name. So I'm not crazy about him going with Murphy Bunting, knowing nothing about why he's doing it, by the way. But anyway, they go Sean Bunting from Central Michigan instead of Greedy Williams, who ends up going a little bit later down the line. But not only do they do that, and we talked on the show last week, we said, hey, or I said, hey, you know, I know everybody's talking about defensive line is next. They passed on Josh Allen, so now they're going to go to work on that. But the Bucs are really, really shy at corner. They need all kinds of help there. I'd love for them to go corner. I tweeted about it, which you can see on my Twitter, at BobbyGameDay. Email me if you want to as well, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. But I was like, all right, hey, let's get the corner thing shored up a little bit. Let's get a good player, whoever it might be. If they had Murphy Bunting highest on their draft board at the time, fine. You know, I'm never going to be one of these guys that pretends I have my own personal draft board that knows more than these teams do. And quite honestly, I'm surprised at how many people act like they know as much or more as these teams do with the scouts, never mind the GM, but the entire teams of scouts they have and hours of film they watch. And, you know, it's okay to have your opinions, but some people just act like they literally can't believe a team would have done something because they looked at a couple things on film and they're convinced, you know, if they had Murphy Bunting rated higher than Greedy Williams, great. That's who they took. I was just glad they took a corner. Little did I know, and little did any of us know at the time, that that was going to be the start of a run on corners just for the Buccaneers, who, and then in the third round, went Jamel Dean from Auburn, and then a five picks later did it again with Mike Edwards, the safety out of Kentucky. Went three straight defensive backs, and hey, more power to him. I know some people were complaining about how they didn't address certain other needs. They finally did go with a defensive rusher, a defensive end, Anthony Nelson from Iowa, in the fourth round. And that's a pick that got actually quite a few accolades from people talking about how good Nelson is and how well the Bucs did to get him at a place like the fourth round. So that's great. They go Terry Beckner Jr. from Missouri in the final round, the first pick of the seventh round, the defensive tackle. And other than that, they had Matt Gay, the kicker from Utah, who we're definitely going to get to in a minute, and Scott Miller, the wide receiver out of Bowling Green. But the overall philosophy that the Buccaneers took on, I mean, look, my criticism would be this, if I have a criticism. They needed, and they still need, offensive line. I thought with one of those picks they might do that. I wasn't angry when they went defensive back, safety, not in the least, because again, we talked about it last week. I mean, what do they have? All right, they got Carlton Davis, they got Vernon Hargraves, that's it at corner essentially, in a league where you need, you know, four or five of those guys. Safety, again, they've got a converted safety in MJ Stewart, who was a cornerback before that, and we have no idea if he'll be any good or not. And then they've got Justin Evans, who's been decent, but again, hardly been a world beater, and somebody who, they have all question marks. Like, they have so many question marks in the secondary. I don't see how you could be that upset about them just getting, if they get these three guys like they got, and one of them turns out to be a stud, they played the percentages fine. I mean, that again, if you get just three guys like that, and it might be the guy you picked first out of all of them, Sean Murphy Bunting, or it could be Dean, or it could be Edwards. Hell, we hope it's all three. But you need bodies. Like, you need bodies, 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 bodies. And they ain't all going to be good, but one or two of them might be. So I have no problem with that. So looking at the Joe Bucks fan poll that the Joes put up, and it was kind of telling because, again, people love to make snap judgments on drafts literally days after they've happened, before there's even been any practices or rookie minicamps, let alone games, let alone seasons down the line, which is only when you can truly evaluate these types of things. But I'm getting the sense there's a little bit of a tepid, lukewarm attitude about the Bucks now after the draft, now that the draft and free agency have come and gone. If you look at some of the power rankings that some of the media people do and things like that, the Bucks' position hasn't moved. In fact, a few people have them a little bit lower rated now than they did before free agency in the draft. And I guess that's not all that surprising when you consider they didn't do that much in free agency. And then, of course, the draft. I mean, who knows? But when the Joes asked everybody on their poll, I have to re-vote in it just to get the results here, what do you think of the Bucks draft? 24-hour flash poll. This is from a couple days ago. The most popular grade was a C that you guys gave it with 38.5%. 28.5% gave it a B, and almost 20% gave it a D. 5.4% of you, including myself, clicked on the I can't button, saying, how could you possibly expect me to give a letter grade on something the results of which have yet to be seen? Makes sense to me. I would have thought that would have been closer to 100%, but again, people love their draft grades, so you guys weren't that excited. Now, I don't know how much of that was backlash to simply not drafting an offensive lineman. I don't know how much of that was backlash to drafting Matt Gay, the kicker out of Utah, after what happened with the whole Roberto Aguayo thing. Certainly, I'll say this much. I don't know what the term or what the descriptor that you might want to use is for Jason Light, but I think it took balls to take a kicker, considering what already happened, and to say, screw all y'all, I'm going right back to the well, I'm taking a kicker again in the draft, knowing what he's going to hear and knowing what people are going to think, hey, at least if nothing else, I'll give him respect for that. Took some cast iron stones. And it takes a real belief that, damn it, we need a kicker to be good, and we're going to come hell or high water, figure out a way to do that. So he goes with Matt Gay. Let me talk about that pick for a second. Because, again, this wasn't trading up to get a guy in the second round, a kicker like Aguayo. This was a fifth-round draft pick. So there's a couple ways of looking at it. One, and this was written about in the Tampa Bay Times, my good friend Thomas Bassinger, who I bring up on the show often because I like his work and I like the way he breaks things down numbers-wise, pointed out how kickers are overrated, how having a good kicker has almost no real influence on the final performance of a team, how points from kickers, the percentage of a team's points from field goals and extra points has been diminishing around the league, and how overwhelmingly what matters the most in any football game is which team scores more touchdowns. And all these things are true, and I am not disputing any of them. So if you look at kickers around the league, the best, the worst, the middle ones, whatever, almost none of them were drafted. And again, even the ones that are very good, their teams don't end up being the best teams. There's really no correlation, in other words, between having a good kicker and having a good team. Does that mean you don't want to have a good kicker? Of course not. You'd rather have a good one than not. But one way to look at it is that the Bucs threw away a fifth-round pick, drafted a kicker, and one, drafted a guy who, you know, may have overstated importance in people's minds. But two, not only that, even if you wanted him, drafted a guy they probably could have gotten later in the draft or not at all and still gotten in free agency. We don't know if that would have happened or not. And it's telling when the guy you actually drafted himself thinks it's a reach. Like Matt Gay was talking about, it's like, really? Like he looked at his phone. He was like, they're drafting me now, like in the fifth round. Like this is really what they're doing. Like even he's like, whoa, dude, this is a reach. You probably could have waited and gotten me later. When even he's the one saying that, then maybe, okay, the Bucs reached a little bit. But the other side of the argument here, and I see this side as well, it's a fifth-round draft pick, okay? Again, it's not a second-round draft pick. How many fifth-round draft picks have any impact at all? I mean, a lot of them don't even make the team, but even if they make the team, how many of them are around for more than a year or two? How many of them have a defined, you know, demonstrable impact on the team going forward for a period of more than a season or so? Almost none. So from that aspect, if you have a guy who ends up being your starting kicker and actually stays with the team for more than 20 minutes, unlike most of the past dozen kickers or whatever it's been, then hey, you got a fifth round pick with a guy that actually is a contributor who can help you win, hopefully, if he's better than average, and maybe something comes of that. And that's, to me, well worth a fifth round pick. Bassinger, for his part, said, no, even if he's halfway decent, it doesn't matter. You basically threw away a lottery ticket. Yeah, fifth-round picks don't often pan out, but you just threw away one more chance. You just decreased your percentages. You know, the more people you draft, the higher percentage you have of finding somebody who's really impactful, and you just lessen those chances. You threw away a lottery ticket because maybe, even though it probably wouldn't have been, maybe that fifth-round pick could have really been somebody. And I get that argument. The only thing I would say to it is this. Would I throw away a lottery ticket just to throw away a lottery ticket? Of course not. None of us would, because it doesn't cost you anything. But if you said, hey, here's a lottery ticket, just a random blank lottery ticket for the Powerball, and you can either have this ticket or I'll just give you $5 right now, which isn't much, but it's worth more than the cost of the lottery, I'd take the $5. So if Matt Gay ends up being a $5 value in this analogy, if you understand what I'm saying, to me that's well worth it because, again, it is a position of need. I guess Cairo Santos they don't trust. He doesn't have the big leg beyond 45 yards. Gay's supposed to be better with that. Who the hell knows? I mean, listen, Roberto Aguayo, I know that was a dumb thing to do in hindsight and everybody makes fun of it, but Roberto Aguayo was really good in college. And I, as a Gator fan, I can tell you this because he kicked for FSU. I mean, I remember going up against him in an FSU Florida games and just the hopeless feeling of seeing him trot out on the field and knowing that it was an automatic 3 points. I mean, the guy was that good. He had a rocket leg. He hit from everywhere. He was just so just mind-numbingly consistent, like a robot, like couldn't miss. So the Bucks were thinking they were getting that guy. And even if he had been that guy, a lot of you probably still think it was a dumb thing to do, and that's fine. But at least if that was what they had gotten, it would have been a lot harder to argue against. But they didn't even get that. They got a toll. He's working for the PGA now. He's actually doing some outreach stuff for the PGA Tour, which sounds cool. But anyway, the point is, there is no way to know how good these guys will be. And with kickers, it seems like there's even more variance than others. So I don't know. With Matt Gay, he might flame out as well. The only sure thing was Matt Bryant and then Connor Barth before his charity basketball ACL blowout. And I still wonder how that would have altered Buccaneer history, or at least Buccaneer kicking history, if that injury hadn't happened. So if Gay ends up actually being good, then great. Could you have drafted him in the sixth round instead? Probably. That's the part I criticize. Do you still have no idea who's playing right guard? Maybe they do. I don't. And I'm not saying you would have drafted a starting right guard in the fifth round or something like that. But again, that's you forego that chance when you take a kicker. And some people are above the position, and it's not necessarily wrong that you just shouldn't draft kickers at all. That should be something handled outside the draft, free agency, what have you. I mean, let's say Matt Gay ends up being another Steven Gostkowski or Justin Tucker or something like that. Then you could say, okay, that's certainly worth a fifth-round pick. I don't know if he'll end up being that, but even if he's, you know, two-thirds of that or something, hey, again, it's a fifth-round pick. I don't have that much of a problem with it. So I am glad they addressed the most dire need. We all watched this team last season. We all watched the defense just get torched on a weekly basis and most of the time kill any chances the Bucks had of winning. It wasn't always their fault, and they played better a little bit later in the season. But for the most part, that was how the early part of the season went, and by the time it got any better, the season was already over. So get bodies. Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, Mike Edwards. Boom, boom, boom. Put them all back there. Let's see what happens in camp. Let's see who emerges, but at least you have people. And if any one of those three guys, like I said, ends up being good, it's well worth it. Devin White, obviously the number one overall pick, or not overall pick, but the number one pick for the Buccaneers, is the centerpiece. But I was really excited to see them go hard at corner, because I really do think that was a need that had to be addressed. And I was not expecting them to do more than a player or so at that position, especially when looking at some of the tea leaves before the draft. And when they re-signed or extended Hargraves, that threw me off a little bit, because I really felt like, oh, okay, they're happier at starting corner than they were letting on. Maybe they'll draft some corners for depth or something. But it seems like now that Hargraves has that extension, that he's going to be a real true bona fide corner, not just a nickel guy. And so it could be both, you know. Yeah, Hargraves is going to be that guy, but we still want other guys too. And so now there's competition back there. Now there's depth. Hopefully all three of these guys are at least serviceable and one of them ends up being really good. That's all you can hope for with picks like that. But as it's all the dust settled now, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, A, B, C. None of you should either. If you want to do that just because, again, you're bored and it's the offseason, that's fine. But when you really get down to it, we have no idea. I am happy, though, that the Bucks did what they could to try to improve the defense, which is about as bad as it gets looking back at last year. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is my email address on Twitter. You can find me at BobbyGameDay. Speaking of the defense, okay, didn't mention this earlier, but he's okay. Jason Pierre-Paul, if you hadn't heard by now, and it's up on the website at Joe Bucks Fan and everything else. But he had a one-car accident in Broward County early, I think it was early Thursday morning, like 5 a.m. or something like that. Had to go to the hospital, got released. He's fine. But that was a little bit of a scare for the Buccaneers there. There is nothing new on the Gerald McCoy front. That was something that people thought might happen in the draft. When you really look at it, nothing has to happen until July. And so it's something that could be ongoing. There were some reports that, oh man, they're making a play for Duke Johnson. They're talking to the Cleveland Browns. It's going to be a straight-up trade. Those reports were refuted by people like Rick Stroud, who did not say they didn't have any. You can't ever say never. Who knows? But all the people that would have been involved in something like that, and people that know those people, all denied any talks had ever taken place. The Gerald McCoy thing is going to resolve itself one way or the other. But nothing new on that front right now. There was what they call off-season coach availability this past Wednesday and Thursday over at One Buck, and all the coaches, and there's no, you know, practices or anything like that, but all the coaches got up there one by one Everybody in the media gets to talk to all the coaches from the head coach on down to the assistant coaches and this, that, and the other. And not a ton of highlights there, but if you want to look at some things that might be a little bit telling, Bucks running backs coach Todd McNair says Ronald Jones. First of all, we knew already that they like Jones. His coaching staff thinks he didn't get to show his true potential last year, and Todd McNair hinted at that. He said, you know, Ronald Jones only had 23 carries as a rookie, which still boggles my mind looking back. He only had 23 carries, but he only had 23 carries, and he was hit at or before the line of scrimmage on 13 of those. So McNair says you can see why his confidence might have been down. And I thought about what he said there for a minute, and I kind of nodded, said, yeah, I could see why his confidence has been down. And now I can see why my confidence is down, too, because it's the same offensive line coming back this coming season with two guys we re-up for more money that got our running backs hit behind or at the line of scrimmage over half the damn time last season. And this goes back to, the Sage and the Joes did their podcast, and Ira talked about the win totals that are out there. And the Vegas win total over-under, if you want to bet on how many games the Bucks will win, is once again, like, I think it's 6.5, right? I need to check it officially, but I think it's 6.5 games. And every year this happens, and the win total is something like that. And every year, the same conversation happens with me and my buddies, probably you and your buddies, too. Oh, man, can you believe 6.5? I mean, it's easy money, man. I think we're going to get, you know, we got a real chance here to win 9-10 games. I think I'm going to bet that when it hit that. And every year, the Bucks end up going 5-11 or something, 6-10. And Vegas knew all along. Not that Vegas is... I tell people this all the time about Vegas, because people think Vegas tries to predict things. Vegas doesn't try to predict anything. Every time a point spread lands on the number, you know, someone's favored by 17 and the final score is, you know, 34-17. And like, oh man, does Vegas know what they're doing or what? Vegas wasn't predicting a 17-point win. The point spread's only there to get half the action on one side and half on the other. The point spread is there trying to find a happy point on the number line where, as a bettor, you look at that and go, I don't know which the hell way I want to go on this one. That's what they're trying to do. Where if they give a number where you look at it and immediately go, oh, yeah, I like so-and-so. Or the other way, oh, yeah, I like so. That's not what they want. They want that middle ground where it's like really a head-scratcher. Like, I don't know which way to go on this. So that, and when they do happen to land on the number on these point spreads, hey, great, all the better. But all they care about is having action on both sides. So having a win total of 6.5 for the Buccaneers just tells you more about the perception of the betting public than it does what Vegas specifically thinks, and people around the league are not exactly excited about this Buccaneer team. And when you look at the roster, and we already talked about all this back when free agency was going on, but when you look at the roster, they don't have a lot of reason to be, because not a lot is that much different. You're either going to have to bet on one of two things: the draft having an outsized impact, like, you know, everybody's always excited about their draft, but they don't realize that 31 other teams also drafted 7, 8, 9 fresh new faces as well. And they all think their guys are going to end up being just as good as you think your guys are going to end up being. So when you take into account, hey, are we going to count on, you know, Sean Murphy Bunting, who's never played in the NFL, as have none of the draft picks? And you're going to count on Devin White and these guys stepping in as starters and just killing it? I mean, that could happen. That'd be awesome, but that's hardly anything you can count on. Or the other thing you're counting on is for the same players who've already been here to simply be better, whether it's because of coaching, which a lot of people think will be the case, or whether it's a case of guys just simply advancing a year in their careers and getting better. Whatever it is, those are the things that are going to have to happen, right? I mean, like, I'm as optimistic as Bucks fans get. I'm not a Pollyanna or anything, but I'm always one of these upbeat, like, always reasons to look forward to things. But let's honestly, like, look inside yourself right now. Those of you who are optimists, the pessimists don't need this. They already know that they think we suck. But the optimists, look inside and think about it real hard and tell me why you think we're going to be better. I mean, sir, you can't come. I mean, you could say, oh, well, Bruce Arians. Okay, well, that's great. I mean, if Bruce Arians comes in here and his staff and they wave a magic wand, they coach him up. And that happens sometimes. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I'm not discounting coaching. But I'm saying that's what you're leaning on, right? Because personnel-wise, we're not much better. We have a lot of rookies now who are different. Other teams have rookies, too. Everybody had the same amount of draft picks. nearly. But no, I mean, you know, and offensively especially, I mean, nothing has changed there with the offensive line, except the right guard spot, which is Alex Kappa. I don't know who the hell it's going to be, somebody like that. So, and Clyde Christensen talked about this with Jameis. He said, with Jameis, he thinks his problems are correctable. Talked about the interception, said they looked at the film, said a lot of it was simply poor throws. He said it wasn't as many poor decisions as people thought. Some of it was accuracy issues and poor throws and things they think they can correct. That's fine. He also, Bruce Arians also mentioned, you know, one of the problems with the interceptions is that we're down by 20 points all the time. And maybe if we're not down by 20 points so much this year, maybe he won't throw so many picks. Hey, hear, hear, I say. Although Greg Allman of the Athletic, the Bucs beat writer for the Athletic, did look at that and determined that only, I think, 10 or 11% of his picks have come when the Bucs were down by 20 or more. Now, I don't think that's a telling enough stat, because when you're down by 7 or 10 or 14 points, especially in the second half, that's just as important a time where you're going to be throwing a lot, and the defense is going to know you're going to be throwing a lot. So even though the 20-point threshold is just an arbitrary number, the idea that, yeah, Jameis had got picked off more because the Bucs were throwing more in second halves of games that they were trailing, I buy into that, and yeah, I hope that's a lot different. Christensen also talked about, as we did the other day, Jameis going up to 250 pounds from 245, and he said, quote, "I hope that's a rumor." He said, "Performance should dictate your weight as a quarterback, or as any player on the field, really. Not anything defensive or not for protection." A lot of people said, oh, Jameis wants to put weight on because he's going to be dropping back more, seven-step drops, that type of thing. He's going to be getting hit more, needs to have the extra beef on there to be able to handle it. Hey, maybe. I don't know. But now to hear the coaches say they think that it's not maybe necessary, I mean, again, I don't think it's as big a deal. I don't think he's going to look that much different than he already has. But that was the main stuff to come out of the coach's availability. Again, it's just a media. It's almost like Super Bowl media days. There's nothing actually coming out of it. It's just a chance for the media to talk to the coaches. And they talk to all of them again. You know, Lori Locust, one of the new female coaches, all the assistant coaches, not just coordinators, but position coaches, assistant position coaches, and all that stuff. And now there won't be much action over at One Buck until the rookie minicamp, which is on May 10th, a week from today, if you're listening to this on Friday. And that'll be fun. We'll get to all that next week. Then, of course, they have OTAs early the week after that. And we're into that off-season grind now, baby. Just some doldrums. There'll be some OTAs and things like that. And otherwise, we're just waiting for training camp. And it's going to be one of those summers where you don't, and this is every year, you know, there'll be some news here and there. But other than that, it's going to be pretty quiet until training camp gets going. And we're going to have fun on this show all summer long, believe me. There are always things to talk about, both Buccaneers and NFL in general, or otherwise. I want to reiterate what I said last week, though, as far as the draft goes, how impressed I was with how excited people get. Nashville was incredible, all the people out there in the street. The TV ratings have come back in. They were through the roof. And it just gets bigger every year, it seems like, no matter who hosts it, no matter what players are in the draft, this, that, and the other. It's just amazing the command that football has on our daily lives, not just during football season, but all year long. And I love it. I'm always looking for reasons, especially with the Lightning being out of the playoffs as early as they were, to get excited about whatever the next thing is. The Rays are doing pretty well right now, and that's exciting too. But when you really break it down, we just have to get through 3 months now, all of May, all of June, and most of July. And there'll be pads clicking and clacking and all that stuff in no time. But in the meantime, for those of you that have any interest in it, I just want to help you out a little bit. Not that I would consider this much help, considering my track record with the Kentucky Derby. But it is Kentucky Derby weekend. And now that the draft dust has settled, we can turn our attention to all the springtime sporting events that are coming up. The Masters has already come and gone. March Madness has as well. And now with the draft over, you've got, if you're into horse racing, the Triple Crown. We've got more golf tournaments and things like that. We'll have tennis and things like that. And, you know, that's what we have to hold us over. The NHL playoffs have been fun, although it's not the same without the Lightning and, like I said, the Rays too. But Derby weekend. Again, one of my favorite days of the year. And I think I'm a sucker for a lot of events like that because I love the tradition. It's the same reason I love the Masters. It's the same reason I love the Indianapolis 500. I like things that happen on the same weekend of the calendar every single year that do things the same way every single year that you can set your watch to, and you know it's going to be like that a year ago, a year from now, 5 years ago, 5 years from now. I mean, I love stuff like that. And maybe it's because so many other things seem so fleeting in the world these days. I love the reliability of traditions. And for me, the Derby, and I've been to three of them in person back when I was in my 20s, but my interest in it goes back to when I was, you know, just in middle school. And so it's been about 25 years now of me picking Derby winners. And I only have had the winner a handful of times in that time. It's a very hard race to handicap. But I'll give you my thoughts on it real quick. Because, of course, you know, every year, if you look at the past, what is it, 5 or 6 years in a row now, we've had the favorite end up winning the race. And not just having the favorite win the race, but the favorite being near the front of the pack, no worse than second or third, at every single call, every point of the race, in all five editions. I think a couple years ago, like Nyquist, I think it was 2-3 years ago, was maybe in third place in the backstretch for a little while. And that was the farthest back any of the Derby winners has been start to finish at any point. So it's kind of, people are calling it boring, where the favorites are winning all the time. There's no bomber closers coming in and picking it up off the ground. The favorite gets near the lead, runs around the track, outruns everybody else in the stretch, and that's that. And it kind of has been that way. And if you know anything about the Derby, I mean, I'm a kid who grew up in the era, not a single, and I mean not a single favorite won the race for 20 years. Like from the time when I started watching this all the way through until my early 20s, okay, the favorite lost every year. I remember in 2000 when Fusaichi Pegasus won the Derby as the favorite, and I was shocked. Like, you'd think, oh, the favorite won, go figure. No, that was one of the most stunning upsets to me as a kid. I was 20 in 2000, so I was still a college kid. But that was one of the most stunning upsets of my Derby experience, was the favorite winning, just because it never happened. So I remember just every year, whoever the favorite was, automatically throwing him out and then looking at all the other horses, because that was who was going to win, somebody from that group. So finally the favorite won in 2000, and I was like, wow, what a monumental upset that the favorite actually pulled one out. And now the past 5-6 years, that's been commonplace. It's been 6 years, I believe, because 13, 14, 15, yeah, going back to Orb in 2013. So this year you get a horse named Omaha Beach who fit that bill perfectly, had all the numbers, fit all the characteristics of a Derby champion, and was, to me, far and above the rest of the horses as far, and you never can just say, oh, this horse is better, so he's going to win, because there's too many variables in the Derby. If it's, you know, a 6, 7, 8 horse race, you feel a little more confident, but with 20 horses, and they're so young, they've never gone this far before, you never know. But Omaha Beach was the guy. He scratched. I think it's opened up kind of a fun race now, because I don't think there really is a hardcore favorite. There, of course, will be a betting line favorite at post time, whether it's game winner, whether it's improbable, whether it's somebody like that remains to be seen. I'm not really sure. But it's not going to be somebody that's a hands down, this guy's the guy, this horse is the horse. We don't know. So what it always comes down to in the Derby, to me, if you're looking to have a little fun with this, if you're having to get together with people on Saturday, or if you just want to go on your phone and make a quick bet or something like that, the old saying in horse racing is pace makes race, okay? And what does that mean? Pace makes race. Well, if it's a fast pace, if the horses that are leading early in the race run really fast, they get tired. It favors horses in the back of the pack that can catch them and pass them near the end of the race and end up winning. If it's a slow pace, the horses near the front tend to stay there and run away with it because they've been allowed to have the lead and not really exert themselves. So every year, as a handicapper, you're trying to decide what kind of pace scenario are we looking at? Because if the pace is really, really fast, the whole race just falls apart, and somebody that's dead last, the way mine that bird was, like 30 lengths behind in the first turn, comes back and wins the race. Or it happened in 2005 as well, with Giacomo coming back and getting the win over a Fleet Alex and a couple of other horses. Again, that whole race just fell apart. That doesn't look to be the case this year. The early speed in this race is not as great as some years, so I start looking at different horses that like to run near the lead. And of course, we've seen that trend hold up over the past few years in a variety of pace scenarios, but certainly this year, I don't see that suicidal pace that's going to break everybody down up front. So I look at a horse like Improbable, who I think could end up being the favorite. He meets all the figure numbers as far as closing pace and things like that from his prep races. He's a Bob Baffert horse, likes to be forwardly placed. And what's also important, and don't forget this, you have a wet track possibly and very likely probably on Saturday with rain expected in Louisville. So you look at horses that have had a good run there. Improbable finished second to Omaha Beach, who's not in the race anymore, in the Arkansas Derby, which was run on a sloppy track. And he's one that I'm considering. I don't have my pick yet, okay? I'm just going to tell you who I'm thinking about because I can't release my pick when I don't have it, and I've still got more thinking to do. But Improbable is one. Maximum Security is another one. Also has a win on a wet track. One from the front in the Florida Derby down at Gulfstream between Miami and Fort Lauderdale. And in that race, got a great pace that he was allowed to set, ran pretty slow. He won't get even that slow of a pace in this race, but he might get a slow pace, and if he does, he's shown the ability to wire a field from gate to wire and go on and just run away with it down the stretch. A dominating win for him as he ended up pulling away by, like, I think it was four lengths or something in that race, and he's the only horse left in this race with the scratch of Omaha Beach now without with a buyer speed figure in the triple digits. For those of you that don't know what that is, you can look it up. But horses that have high buyer speed figures in their last race or their best overall buyer speed figure usually needs to be around the triple digits or higher to be considered a Derby possibility. If you look at history, that's how it's gone. Not always, but most of the time. And Maximum Security certainly fits that bill. So he's one I like. Code of Honor is another one I like, but he's a late runner, so I have questions about him if he'll get the pace he needs. If this race has a faster pace than I'm guessing it will, all of a sudden he becomes somebody who's in play. Tacitus is another one. Tacitus has that stalking running style where he likes to be near the front, not right on the lead, but he'll be in that first or, you know, maybe second wave right behind the leaders. Has the breeding, has a history in his pedigree of horses that like to run on wet tracks. And again, that's not something to be overlooked with the possibilities we're seeing for Saturday's weather, and is another one you have to look at. So as far as my win pick, I'm thinking, oh, another one was By My Standards. By My Standards has run well in the slop as well. He has actually a second place finish in the rain at Churchill Downs last year, and he's got really good closing fractions in his prep race. He's a guy with a trainer, Brad Calhoun, that I haven't heard a lot about. He's not one of the big name trainers, but someone I'm looking at there. So as far as my win pick, I've got it down to a handful of horses. Either going to be By My Standards, Improbable, Maximum Security, or possibly Code of Honor if I decide I think the pace will be slow enough. Cutting Humor is another interesting one, a Todd Pletcher horse who won his prep race, the Sunland Derby, going away. That was definitely not the level of competition there in New Mexico that he'll see in the Derby, but with his running style, a late runner, again, could be someone you want to put at the bottom of Exotics. Spinoff and Country House are a couple of other ones I'm looking at. Just to throw that out there, if you really care what I think and you want to look and check up on it, I'll tweet out my official picks after I decide on what they will be and, you know, I want to get a little closer to the race on Saturday and see what the weather, because the rain, if it is going to officially rain and we know it's going to rain, that'll change my thinking or solidify my thinking in some ways. Right now, 2 days out or so, the forecast could still change. But if it does rain, that makes a big difference. As it is, enjoy the weekend. Again, if you're not a horse racing person, sorry about the final 10 minutes of the show today, but it is one time a year on this show that we're going to get into that. And like I said, if you want to tweet or check my picks on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay is the Twitter handle. Email me if you want to. Love chatting with you guys and hearing from you guys, @BobbyGameDay. The draft is over. We have our roster for now. Of course, it'll get cut down to the 53 in training camp, but we've got, for all intents and purposes, the 90 guys that are going to be there to start training camp. There could be some changes here and there as time goes on. And so now it's just time to start wading our way through that long off season. You will always, on a daily basis, have action at joebucksfan.com. Y'all already know that or you wouldn't be here, but it is the single best place on the internet for Tampa Bay Buccaneers coverage every single day of the year. I don't care if it's the season, the off season. In fact, it's better in the off season than the season. In the season, you can read stuff anywhere. In the off season, though, folks, all right, you're still going to get the latest Bucks news, opinions, all the podcasts, everything else. JoeBucksFan.com. Thanks to the Joes, as always, for allowing me this platform and to get in front of you guys. I also want to thank our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, Sean Sullivan and company. Remember again that if you want to go check out all the inventory, everything they have on the lot, just go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E. And you can check out the transparent online pricing. It's all right there. You don't have to guess or wonder. And on top of that, if you mention Joe Bucks Fan, if you mention me, if you mention the Free Stretch or anything like that, you'll get the Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of that transparent online pricing that you see on the website. Go check them out. A mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. All y'all, thank you for listening, and thank you for all the emails I get and things like that. I love hearing from you guys. Have a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the draft. The draft party was awesome that the Joes put on over at Buffalo Wild Wings, and it went into night two and everything like that. I mean, they did a great job. Another successful year in the books. So whatever parties you're having or not having this weekend, just be safe. Have fun. Happy Derby. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's the Free Stretch post-draft pre-Derby edition. In the meantime, instead of everybody today to close it out, I'm going to close you out with one of my favorite all-time race calls, Tom Durkin, the 2005 Kentucky Derby stretch run, one of the wildest horse races I've ever seen, and I was there on the rail, actually at Churchill Downs, and just the pandemonium, everybody screaming, just lunatic screeching, and yet I didn't, until I got home, get to watch the DVR clip of this, which to this day puts goosebumps all up and down my arms. If you're looking to get in the mood for the Derby, here's the best way to do it. Tom Durkin, the 2005 stretch run of the Kentucky Derby. And until next weekend, be safe, have a happy Derby weekend, have fun, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.
As they round the far turn, 3 furlongs to go here. They ran 3/4 in a bruising 109-2. And here comes Bellamy Road, who's charging up on the outside. With him, Spanish Chestnut is weakening. A Fleet Alex is in behind them. Closing Argument is in with a chance there on the outside. Buzzard's Bay coming down the middle of the track at the top of the stretch in the Kentucky Derby. High Five, Bellamy Road, Closing Argument on the far outside. Here comes a Fleet Alex charging through between horses. Giacomo, Don't Get Mad, late charge on the far outside. Coming down to the finish, Closing Argument, short lead. Giacomo, a Fleet Alex. It's a 3-horse photo finish, and on the wire, it's Giacomo, who has won the 131st Kentucky Derby. Close for second, Closing Argument, and the Fleet Alex, Don't Get Mad, was fourth.